Many people believe that meditation is only for those kind of people. I'm here to have you think about it a little bit differently today. My name is Dawn Culp. I'm a certified hypnotherapist, Reiki master teacher, meditation coach, and owner of the Zen Room in Gilroy, California. You can also find us online at www.thezenroom.net. And today we're going to be talking to the meditating police captain. Hi, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Zen Room. As I mentioned on the top of this podcast, we are going to be joined today by a gentleman. His name is Joe, and he is a police captain in the San Francisco Bay Area, California. Joe, I am so excited to have you on the call today. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Dawn.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. I have been looking forward to this since we first put it on the calendar a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, I'm so excited as well. I can't believe I get to do this with you.
Great. Well, I know we've got quite a bit of content to cover, so we're going to go ahead and just dive right on in. So, Joe, I know who you are, but I want to start getting my audience acquainted with you. So can you give us just a little bit of background about yourself, your name, where you're from, and obviously your occupation?
So my name is Joe Cefalu. Originally from San Jose, California, born and raised and grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I'm a police captain in the San Francisco Bay Area for a small police department. We're about 46 sworn officers and about 70 total staff members.
And how long have you been in law enforcement collectively throughout your whole career?
Total full-time law enforcement experience. I've been doing it for 25 years. I started actually as an explorer, which in a lot of agencies is called a cadet. I was 19 when I started that. I did that for 2.5 years, and then I became a reserve police officer, which is a volunteer at the city that I'm working at now for 3 years. So total time in law enforcement, a little over 30, but 25 of it is a full-time paid.
Got it. Okay. So as I was preparing for our original meeting a few weeks back, I actually had to Google police officer rankings because I didn't understand, you know, how it all goes. So captain, chief, sergeant, all of that. Would you mind just giving us a real quick overview on what the rankings for police officers, where it starts and where it can go, just to give my listeners an idea of what captain means?
Sure. Every agency is a little bit different. So usually when you start out as an officer level, which is entry level, you know, you're working as a patrol officer. So that's usually first level. And then depending on what agency it is, you move up to either they have a senior officer rank or they have a corporal rank. We call them in our agency, we call that corporal rank. We call it agent.
Okay.
And then from there, you can go to sergeant, and then a lieutenant, a captain. Some agencies call their captains commanders. And then in my agency, we just have sergeant, and then you go to the rank of captain, which is basically like the number two in the agency. And then you would go right to police chief would be the next step. But in a lot of agencies, you have captain, and then sometimes you have a deputy chief, or some agencies have what they call majors, like model it more after the Army, and then an assistant chief, and then the chief of police. But like I said, in my agency, you go from the captain is the one step below the chief.
Gotcha.
Of police.
Okay. So you have 30 years under your belt, 25 professionally, and fair to say that you understand the inside of the organization far better than somebody like me does. So when I try to put myself in the shoes of a police officer, I'll be honest with you, I do it through like what I know from what Hollywood has shown me, what I understand through what TV has shown me. And we all know that, you know, Hollywood doesn't always get it right.
Yeah, that's true.
But they do a good job, you know. But as somebody who's been doing what you've been doing for such a long time, when I try to think of the life of a police officer, it's harder than anything that I could possibly imagine. I'm sure you see things that you can't unsee. I'm sure you've had to have conversations and deliver news that no one should ever have to do in their lifetime. I listen to your podcast, which I would invite my listeners to do as well, to hear some of the really hard, in-depth stories around some of the heartbreaking situations that you've had to encounter. So I would say, you know, let people come to your podcast and listen to all the details of your backstory. But if you can give us a brief overview of how all of your difficult situations started to back up on you, that would help get us to the place where meditation enters the next act. If you can get us there, that would be great.
Sure. Yeah, so like any new officer, I started, you know, I first started actually working in the jails for a couple of years. I did a couple of years in for a couple of local sheriff's departments working in corrections, which is a totally different realm of police work. Being inside in a custody environment is, you know, you don't, the only tool you have is a radio, and you have to learn to talk to people. And if you don't do that, then you're not going to be very successful. So from very early on, I was put in some, you know, difficult situations, but, and I started my career at the agency that I'm at, and I was working patrol like any new officer would. And 2.5 years into my career, I got involved in an officer involved shooting. I was part of a group that was, officers were chasing somebody who was wanted for attempt murder. They was going to go kill his parents. And he had already rammed two officers' cars trying to, you know, injure them and hurt them. And so I was laying out a spike strip, and I was up on the curb, and this car that it was a truck, it was like a FedEx type truck, came, started chasing me down, and I had nowhere else to go. And the only other way to defend myself was to use my firearm. And I discharged a couple rounds at the truck, and, you know, it eventually stopped, and we got the guys in custody, and they charged him with attempted murder on myself. Mm-hmm. But that was very stressful, because I was only on 2 years. And so I was, you know, here I am in a shooting, and what's going to happen to me? I'm going to get interviewed by, you know, homicide investigators. So that was a stressful situation. I got some ribbing from some people here that you'd never been in a situation like that. And so they started teasing me a little bit about, oh, you didn't even hit the guy, and which is good. I'm glad I didn't, because
be a whole other thing.
You know, there's officers out there who've killed people, and it's, you know, it affects your life. And so, you know, I went about my career and kept moving on. I went to investigations and worked, we call persons crime. So anything to do with people. So it was basically robberies, death investigations, home invasions, occasional homicides, some cold case homicides and stabbings and gang cases. And, you know, I saw a lot of things doing that with death investigations that I can never unsee. And, you know, you always remember the kids. Sure. And I one case in particular that I know the mother killed baby, and I just didn't have enough evidence to prove it. And that case, you know, haunted me for a number of years, because I felt like I let myself down, and I let, you know, the family down. I just couldn't right. prove it anyway. So, you know, go on to be a sergeant, I got promoted to agent or corporal for a short period of time. I got promoted to sergeant right after that. And, you know, that was really fun, because I'm out in patrol again on night shift with a great team of people. We're just having a lot of fun. But there's always, you know, difficulties when you're supervising people, because everyone has their lives at home. Mm-hmm. So that was fun. And I came in as a sergeant to administration for the chief's office.
And by now you're what age by now?
So when I got promoted to sergeant, I was 40.
Okay, so you've got at this point then a good solid 15, 20 years under your belt.
Correct. I had, at that time I had, when I got promoted to sergeant, I had been on about 12 and
okay.
a half years.
And at that point, had any of, to your knowledge, any of the instances that you had, you know, had to endure, had they backed up on you at this point that you were aware of? Meaning sleeping, any problems sleeping, any problems emotionally, any problems physically?
I mean, hindsight, yeah, probably. I just thought it was, you just think it's part of the job. You know, you're working shift work. I was working midnight shift a lot. Most of my career, I spent working midnights by choice because that's where all the action was. And that's what I, wanted. And, yeah, I think I probably had a pretty short temper. I remember, vividly remember an incident. I got an argument at home. I got an argument and I punched the wall and I put a hole in the wall. And I was like, God, that is not me. What's going on? And my kids were really, really small at the time. I'm like, this is not the kind of dad I want to be. But I never even thought about it until you just said something right now. But clearly the job was getting to me back then where I didn't even realize.
Well, it's one of those things where a lot of times, you know, when we think of accumulation, when we talk about, you know, interest, you know, you accumulate interest, you accumulate, you know, furniture, the longer you're on this planet, you accumulate a lot of things. People a lot of times don't think necessarily of accumulating baggage, emotional baggage or stress, accumulating stress. And so I didn't want to interrupt you, but I wanted to at least put a marker there and say, could, even at this point, were you starting to notice shifts within who you were, your personality, your patterns? Were you already starting to notice, okay, this job definitely comes with a price tag?
Yeah, I guess I really didn't put two and two together until right now. I guess that could have been a symptom. I know later on as we get going, I mean, that's significant events that occurred that started to make me, you know, really, I say, you know, I always say the wheels are starting to come off the bus a little bit. But yeah, I you know, looking back, sure, that absolutely probably was a symptom of the shift work and not sleeping properly.
And the stress.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
for
the stress
sure.
Or the massive amounts of adrenaline that you probably that you probably your glands are spewing out right in order to chase the bad guy.
Well yeah, you know, working in a patrol environment, you're turned on. You know, fight or flight is on. You're on fight for your entire 12-hour shift because you just don't know what's coming when.
Sure.
So you're constantly running. I remember just walking in the locker room and putting on my uniform, you know, your heart rate would just go up because you're ready to fight.
Of course.
Right? You're ready to
get in there.
Go out into combat.
And you know what? Yeah. There's a special place in the afterlife for all of you guys who put on that uniform and protect the rest of us. I mean, for sure. So now getting back to your story. So then again, we don't want to, you know, I want people to go to your podcast and listen to all the details, but then once you got to a certain place, then there were some definite points where as you put it, the wheels started to come off the bus. Take us there.
Yeah. So I got promoted to captain in 2014, and the first 3 years were, you know, great, no real worries. And then in 2017, two significant episodes happened back to back where in the month of February, you know, one of our coworkers, his daughter passed away, and I was there at the hospital. I had to tell him, and then 3 or 4 days later, another coworker's daughter accidentally got run over by her husband. It was just tragic accident, mm-hmm. and they're close with them. And I went out to the scene. I was acting chief that week, and I had to bring her to the hospital and was there for the family and see the scene that I saw. And those two events really took a toll on me. And I didn't realize it until about, you know, 2 months after that, 3 months after that, I started having chest pains, and I thought for sure I was having a heart attack. You know, at this point I was 47 years old, and I figured, well, no stress on this job. Sure. It's possible that I'm having a heart attack. And I went to the ER. My wife's an ER nurse, trauma nurse. And she said, hey, if you're having pain, you have to go in. And they ended up, I spent the night there and didn't find anything. And I chalked it up to anxiety and panic attack. And I had the first one I'd experienced in my entire life. And I thought, what was wrong with me? You know, and didn't do anything about it. You know, just kept going. And then that summer I had 6 weeks of just anxiety and panic attacks. And it's like, what is wrong with me? I'm losing my mind or something. I'd never experienced that. And it wasn't, and I just suffered with it for for quite a while. And the only way I could, you know, when I had a bad day, I'd come home and well, let's have a beer. And that went to, well, let's have a whiskey. And instead of having an occasional cocktail on the weekend with my wife, then it's like, oh, Monday, I need a cocktail. And Wednesday and Thursday, I need a cocktail. And then, oh, it's Friday, so we got to go out and have Friday and Saturday. Right. Of course, we got to have cocktails. And so I started drinking more than I was accustomed to. And then I couldn't sleep. And I didn't know it at the time. You know, your people think that alcohol is a depressant, and it is. And it doesn't help you sleep. It breaks your sleep cycle. And I didn't know that. I was like, well, if I'm drinking, I should be sleeping. So now what do I do? I need to take melatonin. I need to take Advil PM. I just need to take straight up Benadryl.
Right.
Something to help me fall asleep. You got, and that was every
lack
night.
Of sleep issues. So you're trying to deal with the lack of sleep issues. You're noticing your alcohol intake has significantly just grown over time. But it probably happens so gradually, Joe, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it probably happens so gradually that you almost don't even notice that it happened.
Yeah. At the time, I had no idea. I had no idea that it was going.
Right.
I knew that taking all these sleep aids to go to sleep probably wasn't a good idea on top of the alcohol, but I just wanted to get some sleep. And I just like, oh, I got to sleep better tonight. And I just kept increasing the doses from one to two to maybe I'll take that in combination with something else.
And blood pressure. So that's, you know, you've got your patterns that are being shifted, but something very tangible that somebody could measure is blood pressure. Did you notice any changes in your blood pressure?
You know, I didn't until fast forward to May of 2018. So we're talking a whole year later of having panic attacks not like every day, but every once in a while, but that summer of 17 was bad. But fast forward to May when one of our officers, you know, very young, 33, prime of his life, former Marine, super fit, one of our tactical officers, you know, he was working out with the team and his heart stopped. And, you know, they had to do CPR and they had to shock him back to life. And he was in the hospital and long recovery. And that had a devastating effect on a lot of us here because, wow, here's this young officer who basically they brought him back, but, you know, he's never come back to work. And he's so close to all of us. And I was still doing follow up with my cardiologist based on the symptoms I'd had over the last year. And like 4 or 5 days after this event, I had a treadmill test, you know, a stress test. And I get to her office and she puts me on the machine and takes my blood pressure and it's, you know, 220 over 150. And she's like, holy smoke, get off. Like we can't
220
even do
this over test. 150 is insanely high.
Yeah. Ridiculously high. I was so amped up. And I tried to explain to her, listen, this is what happened to me the other day. And I just wanted to talk about it, but she wanted nothing to do with me talking at all. She just
said, get
immediately
off the treadmill.
Threw a prescription.
Liability.
Yeah.
Get off
yeah,
the
but
treadmill.
You might need to go to the hospital right now and threw a prescription at me and threw me out of her office. And I'm like, well, I'm not taking this prescription because I know it's all in my mind. I'm a pretty healthy person. I eat well. Now that last year, I really stopped exercising to the threshold that I used to. And I did start eating a little worse. So with alcohol and, you know, salt intake and not exercising, I'm sure my blood pressure was a wreck.
Sure.
But that event's what triggered my, you know, the high blood pressure that was crazy.
So at what point, okay, so now you are realizing something's got to give, right? So the patterns have shifted to a place that aren't working for me. My body's physically at a place that can't operate at this kind of high level of stress for much longer. I'm not enjoying the panic attacks. The alcohol consumption's a little too high. At what point? Because basically the reason we're having this conversation, Joe, is because there's a lot of police officers out there who are going to listen to this and they're going to relate to your story. They're either going to be 5 years in and noticing, oh, wow, yeah, I am kind of noticing my sleep is impacted. At what point did you say, let's try something totally out of the box?
I waited. So that was May of 18. And I waited until February of 19. So you're almost 10 months of me just denial and not doing anything and being the, you know, trying to be the typical, what I call the typical officer of just, oh, I'm fine. I'm tough. I could take care of this. I don't need any help. And then in February of 19 last year, my chief said, hey, there's this retreat in Monterey, near Monterey, California, that's being taught. It's been taught by a police chief, and he is teaching this class on mindfulness and for first responders. And I'm like, all right, that sounds dumb, but okay. He's like, well, I want you to come with me. I'm like, I'm not going to meditate. That sounds stupid. I'm not doing that. He's like, no,
that sounds come with dumb. Me.
I think it'll, right? It did. I'm not going to lie. It sounded dumb. I'm like, well, I'm going to sit there and like cross my legs and chant. I'm like, I didn't know what sure. it meant. And I was just being ignorant. And he says, no, come with me. I think it'll benefit you. He was going for himself because, you know, as a chief, you struggle. It's even more sure. weight than I had to bear, yep. right? So I'm like, all right, I will go for you to be there for you as your support. I'll go in with an open mind and, well, okay, I'll sit in a circle and we'll sing Kumbaya, uh-huh. yep. and I'll, whatever. And I went, and I tell you, Dawn, it changed my life.
Okay. That's why you're on this podcast, Joe, is because it's not the first time I've heard that. I've heard that from all walks of life, all ages, and people have a preconceived notion about what meditation is or what meditation isn't. But when they, you know, when they at least open their mind enough to give it a try, they go, holy cow, I couldn't have expected that. So how did it change right. your life?
You know, I remember that first day sitting around the room. It was all first responders. It was all police officers from various agencies and dispatchers. And I remember that first meditation we did, I closed my eyes and I opened my eyes and look around and see if everyone else had their eyes closed. I'm like, oh, I better close my eyes back again.
Yep.
And then throughout the day, I'm like, okay, this is okay. I mean, I don't know how this is really going to change. But then it was that last meditation, and it was right before, it was after dinner, and hey, it's optional, come. And I'm like, I got nothing to lose. And it was that one that just resonated with me that he had us, oh my God, this could be it. This could be my savior.
Yeah.
And I went through, it was like 30 or 40 minutes long. And afterwards I just felt like this complete release. And I felt so good. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
and that night was the first night I didn't take a sleep aid to go to bed, and I haven't taken them since. And it's been a year.
Yes.
And I just like, you know, wow. And so I really started meditating every single day, guided meditations. I found a YouTube channel that I really like to follow. Great. And I just love the voice. And I just started down the journey. I tried setting intentions for myself for the day, and I started picking up books to read and trying to educate myself on sleep and, you know, mindfulness and all that, you know, meditation. And I've been practicing now. It's been almost 1 year, and I probably meditate, you know, at least 5 days a week. Some days I
yep.
forget to do sure. it, but that's okay, because I tell myself I don't have to meditate. I get to meditate.
That's right.
I think so. I try to take time for myself, and I think that's what's lacking, is that we you know, in this profession, we teach these officers and for firemen, EMS, whatever it is, dispatchers, we teach you how to do the job, like drive fast, shoot a gun, arrest people, but we don't teach you how to take care of yourself. You know, we let you figure that out on your own.
Right.
That's the problem with the culture right now. That's what I'm trying to change.
Which I applaud you, because, and I, like I said, no, you're going to know the inside of the culture far better than I do. I will tell you that I have a pretty decent percentage of ex-Marine, ex-military, all branches of military. I have ex-military that are clients of mine. I have got.
You can't say. You can't say ex-Marine because once you're a Marine, you're
always
That's what I'm told.
You are so right about that. And I apologize to all the Marines listening to this. My dad was actually a Marine. He's like, honey, once a Marine, always a Marine.
That's right. That's right.
That's right. So people who have served their maybe done their tours of duty, or they are retired, you know, military. I've got those as clients. I've got, you know, firefighters as clients. I've got a lot of first responders, a lot of police officers, and the stigma at first is always the same. This is woo-woo. This is weird. I don't need it. But I have noticed that is starting to change, and it's changing because people like you, Joe, are actually talking about it. So
yeah, it's a profession that, you know, silence, like I said on my podcast, it prefers to suffer in silence. And that's the truth, because we have to be there out in the field for people in their worst of times. Yeah. And we were always taught, hey, you just got to suck it up and do your job. And that doesn't work.
Right. Well, I'm not sure that it ever did, but it's starting to get even more aggravated. So I know that you had shared with me a statistic, and this is a public data point. This is a public stat. I believe between 2016 and 2019, the suicide rate among law enforcement, it hasn't quite doubled, but I think it's like 40% higher.
Yeah, it's significantly higher. You know, just in last year alone, 2019, and we're just talking police officers, 228 of them that we know of took their lives.
And that's
those are the ones that they only know of. It's probably higher.
And that's nationwide, correct?
Correct. That's nationwide, right. And so the number of officers that are killed in the line of duty from a felonious assault is lower than that number.
Wow. So I mean, that's significant.
It's very significant.
And so I think when we were having our chat, one of the things that you had said is, hey, if I can be you know, the older guy in the room who doesn't care if people roll their eyes at me or think I'm nuts or think I'm crazy, I'm okay to do that, even if it saves one life.
100%. I'm very secure where I'm at in my life and in my career. And I know the effects and the things that I did that affected, you know, not only myself, but my family. And I know that, this helped me, and I'm not saying it's just meditation or just mindfulness. I mean, you just need to find something for those out there that you want to spend your time doing away from the job that's positive and that's in enjoyment. And, that's a big thing. I let some of those things go in my life, or I didn't realize doing them that I was actually practicing mindfulness. Like I really enjoy fishing, and I'm a big hunter. And I was on a trip this last in October of 19, and I was 7 days out in the middle of nowhere, and I was backpacking hunting.
Yep.
And I realized, wow, I remember I was on this like 6-hour walk, and I had to watch every step that I was taking, and look under every bush because I didn't want to make any noise. And it was like I had this aha moment. I'm like, oh my gosh. This is my
1,000,000%. Yes.
I am paying attention to what I'm doing in the moment, and I'm not doing anything else other than being present right here, right now. And I was like, I've been doing this for 45 years.
Well, and that's the thing. Because sometimes.
Why did it take me so long?
So if a long time ago, and I wouldn't say that he would even call himself a professional climber, but my husband used to like to dabble in climbing and rock climbing. So he says, what's really cool about that is when you are rock climbing, you know what you're not doing? You're not worried about anything from yesterday, and you're not thinking about anything tomorrow, because all that matters is the next finger hold.
So
it's the same kind of thing. You know, all that matters is how quiet you can make your next footstep, or noticing, do I need to go east? Do I need to go west? And there's no other moment but this one right now. Nature is huge, by the way. Getting back to nature, maybe you want to say back to basics or whatever, but I think that that is a very fair thing to say. Mindfulness is the ability to be incredibly present in this moment right now.
Correct.
So you had your cow. I had that beautiful release. There's people who have never a release before because they've never taken the step to meditate or do energy work or any of the sort. When you say you had a release, what did that feel like, or what was that like for you?
You know, I just felt like I could breathe again. It felt like all weight physically fell off of me. And it's like, you know what? I think that I'm going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not alone. I honestly felt alone. I was suffering, and that I was the only one experiencing this thing, because clearly everybody else I worked with was super tough and nobody was saying anything. So I figured they were all fine. And I was the only one that's like, I'm off. There's something wrong with me. Maybe what's wrong with me? And it wasn't until this class that I realized. And after starting this podcast, I'm not alone. I mean, there's thousands of people out there that feel the exact same way. They've had the exact same experiences, maybe just, you know, a little different, but every first responder has felt, you know, seen and done things that bothered them. But, you know, that I'm just not alone. It just felt like everything just fell off. I just felt so much better. And
yes. Well, one of the things,
still have days where I don't feel great, but, you know, that's life.
Yes,
though.
Of course. And so, one of the things that I chat about with every new client who comes into the Zen room is I say, imagine yourself as a stool with three legs. You have a physical leg, you have an energetic leg, and you have a mental leg. So I am not a doctor and I am not a therapist, but I do help with the, some people call it emotional. Some people call it the energetic. I like the word energetic, but a lot of people have a hard time kind of wrapping their head around that. But it's one thing to, you know, to talk out your problems, maybe with a therapist, and there's a lot of value in that. And there's a lot of, and then of course you need to go to your doctor to make sure that, okay, the physical systems are, they're monitored and all that. But then there's this other aspect, that third leg of the stool that often gets left behind. And it's such an important leg, which is learning what to do with all of that stress, how to, you know, you can, in your logical left brain mind, know I need to let this go. But meditation or mindfulness is a beautiful tool in actually helping to let that go. And it's so hard to explain it to somebody who has not experienced it, which is why I always tell people, go experience it for yourself. You have to try it out. Now, at first, how many meditations did you do before you had the one that was the big one?
You know, it was in that first class. It was, I think we did probably two or three small meditations throughout the day, but, you know, lasting like 10, 15 mm-hmm. minutes on that first day. But it was that night one that was like, it just clicked for me. And I mean, that doesn't always happen, I don't think, but I was very fortunate, and I'm glad it did, because it was like, wow, this is going to work. And then, you know, the next day it was easier, and it gets easier as you go. Some days I try, and I sit there and I try to meditate, and my mind's just going crazy and I can't stop it. So I just stop and I go, well, today, right now is not the right time. I'll try again later. But yeah, for me, it was that first day and the evening session that just clicked for me. I just felt it.
I have to meditate 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times before they have the one that goes, okay. So maybe some advice that you might have is give it a minute, like give it a good, honest, solid try.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, definitely give it a try. I mean, it's not going to hurt you, right? There's nothing that you're going to do that's going to be harmful. It's going to cost you taking a little bit of time, and it's good. You need to take time for yourself in this profession. You can't run 24/7 as a first responder. You needed time to recharge. And this is one of the ways that I now enjoy charging. I don't look at it as like a, as a task, like, oh, I have to go do this. Like, no, I get to take this time for myself. And that's what's important. I just wish I had found this so much sooner in my career than I did right now, because I think it would have just, I feel it made me, it's made me not only a better, you know, husband, a better father, but a better leader in my organization, because I feel like I have more patience now. You know, I used to just react to things, and now it's just like, look, let me stop. Let me take a breath. Let me observe what's going on and what I'm feeling right now before I make a response. And I mean, it doesn't work all the time, but you have to just know that you're okay. Let's just take it.
Yep.
Just take that couple deep breaths. And
well, you know, it's, we're still going to be human, right? You're still going to have moments where you're like, oh boy, that got the best of me a little more than it should have. Or man, I cut. Yep. But what I have found is, because people think that, oh, because I do this all day, every day, that I never react to anything. And it's like, no, that's not true at all. Of course I do. But I stay there for a shorter period of time. It happens less often. And I'm able to get myself back in check much faster.
I would totally 100% agree with that. The times that it has failed me, or I failed it, I realized, okay, well, that wasn't appropriate. And that response was wrong. And I didn't follow my own advice. So I will do better next
time.
And
maybe it's, you know, before you have that follow-up conversation, you go and you ground, or you take 5 minutes of deep breathing in the car, or whatever, and you get yourself back to a more managed place. So you said it made you better father, better husband, better leader. Emotionally, panic attacks, have you noticed a huge improvement in how often and how severe they get?
Yeah, I all of 2019, from February on, I think the only one I had was the first part of December. It was December 7th, because I remember, and I don't know what caused it. I was going to go hunting with my cousin, and I got there, and I don't know. Something was bothering me, and I just remember – I feel like my chest hurt. I'm like, geez, am I having a heart attack? I'm like, wait a minute. I know this is not a heart attack. I've already been checked out. I'm fine. This is in your mind. You just start breathing, calm down. It took me a few hours to calm down, but and I don't know why it happened. And I know it was probably work related, because at that time I was acting chief. Our chief was out for a significant amount of time, and I'd taken over a month before as acting chief, so I know I had a lot of things on my mind, and so I'm sure that had something to do with it. I think I only had one after I started meditating, which I'll take that.
Especially because you went from having several in a month to having one in a year, I would say that is a significant improvement.
Yeah, and I don't have to take any medication to fall asleep. I don't feel a need to come home.
Pound down the alcohol. Yeah,
I mean. Yeah, I don't, it doesn't happen anymore. Like occasionally on the weekend, you know, I'll have I like red wine, so I'll enjoy my red wine, but I don't need to do it on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday,
it's
Thursday.
It's more of a celebratory thing as opposed to a medication thing.
Yeah, it's more of a hanging out with my wife and having a glass of wine instead of I need to try what's going on in my life.
Absolutely. So definitely noticing some improvements everywhere.
100%.
I'm sure that you are sharing this with people. How are people's, especially at work, what is their reaction when you tell them that you are doing all this, what they might put under the woo-woo umbrella? What is their reaction at this point?
You know, it's funny, because when I first told, I told a gal here that I was meditating, and she kind of chuckled, and I'm like, oh, and I looked at her and she's, oh, well, you don't look like somebody who meditates. I'm like, well, what does somebody who meditates look like?
Exactly.
And she's like, that's a good point. but since I put out the podcast last week, I sent out an email here with a link, and I tell you, the response has been overwhelming. And I've had people come up to me privately and say, oh my God, I feel the same way. I've had this happen. And then I get messages from other colleagues that I haven't seen in years on Facebook. Hey, Joe, wow, thanks for putting that out. You know, I can't believe it. I've had this, this, and this. And it's funny because I got a phone call yesterday from one of our former sergeants and a big mentor of mine. And I answer the phone. I'm like, hey, what's going on, buddy? And he's crying. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, are you okay? And, you know, he was an officer for 30 years with us. And he said, you know, I just listened to your podcast. I was pacing around my house the whole time. And I started thinking of things that I hadn't thought of in 30 years. And he's been retired for 8. And he started crying. He's like, he started telling me all these things. And he's like, you know, I haven't told anybody in my entire career what I'm telling you right now. But and he's, thank you. Thank you for sharing. I can't wait for the next episode.
So
it's been overwhelmingly positive, and it's just a joy.
I am thrilled beyond thrilled. So the reason that you and I connected, which is funny because you actually knew my husband years ago, my husband, the dog trainer, and as a I'm like, oh, we actually are, our 6 degrees of separation is getting dwindling down. And it turns out literally you're one street over. Talk about being, we were neighbors and didn't even know it. So you had reached out to Jen, who is a Reiki practitioner, and she was also a first responder in her previous life. And that is our connection is through Jen. And Jen is dedicating her life to making these connections with people because she says, you know, if I knew now what I didn't know then, I would have been, first of all, a much different first responder. And I wouldn't have had to quit. She said, I didn't have the tools to survive that job longer than the 2 years that she did. So she's really making it her life's work to make these connections and get the first responders the help that they need. So it is through her. Hi, Jen. Thank you for connecting me and Joe here that you and I had the meeting and basically said, so you have decided to make it your life's work to start a podcast, and the name of that podcast, I want you to start talking about it now.
Yeah, the name of the podcast is called The Mindful Cops. It's for all first responders. The Mindful First Responders didn't sound good to me.
Yep.
It's, you know, cops is what I know, so I call it The Mindful Cops. We're on Anchor Podcast, or you can find us on Apple, Spotify, and about 7 other different platforms. Yep. And there's a Facebook page called The Mindful Cops. We're on Instagram at The Mindful Cops. One of our officers here helped me set up a website, themindfulcops.com. So we're just starting to get rolling, and you know, it's starting to spread, which is great. And I've made some connections already on the other coast, and I've got a list of people I want to have on the podcast.
So exciting.
I got about 20 names so far of different experts in the field. Because listen, Don, I'm not an expert. I'm just somebody who found this. It works for me. And I'm tired of being silent. I was tired of hearing officers that took their own lives. If I could just help one person, my life's mission.
1,000,000%. But I've got news for you, my friend. It's going to be more than one person.
I hope so. I really do.
Most certainly. And because I can tell you, I've been doing this for part-time for a long time and then full-time for about 4 years. But I knew that there were A, too many people who were suffering needlessly. B, too many people who were not reaching their full potential, because I believe we are all here. We come to this earth with a mission and intentions and a bag of gifts to help us get there. And most of us are so much on the hamster wheel all the time that we don't carve out enough time in our lives for us and what our heart and what our passions want us to do for humankind, right? For mankind. It makes perfect sense to me when you had reached out and said, look, this culture of suffering and silence needs to stop. I don't know what the meeting is going to be about, but let's meet. So then fast forward a couple weeks, we were meeting in your office, and it was a really, really fruitful conversation. And your podcast wasn't quite there yet, but I knew it was on the horizon for you, and I knew that your message was important. So I couldn't be more thrilled for you and all the people who are going to get helped, whether it's a little bit or a lot, as a result of all the work that you've got in front of you.
Well, I mean, you really pushed me to do it because I've been thinking about it for like 10 months. And I remember you told me when we met, you said, you're the one that's standing in your own way. Nobody's standing in your way but you. You have to just take small steps every day. Just, you know, download the app and then do this and then buy a microphone. And it, and next thing I know, it's taken off. And it's, and so far it's been a pretty wild ride. And so I kind of owe it to you to, and I appreciate you, you know, making me realize that I can do it and I'm in control of it. And so thank you very much. It was absolutely a pleasure.
It's funny because I remember in one of my very early meditations for my own personal life, when I was trying to decide if I was going to give up the cozy, cushy career at Silicon Valley to go and do this completely outrageous, by some people's definitions, completely outrageous adventure of opening up a meditation and energy space in Gilroy, which is, you know, it's, you know, we're just normal people down here.
Right.
That
great community, though. Gosh. I mean, the support in that
Gilroy
community
is fantastic. We moved down here 16 years ago thinking we'd stay for a year, and we never left, right? So we love the community. I just wasn't sure if it was going to be able to, you know, lots of people weren't sure if it was going to be able to support something kind of on the fringe. And it absolutely has. But one thing that I learned in my meditation was when I had kind of asked to be shown the benefits if I go this route, was there was a long line of people who needed the help. And the long line of people who needed my help, who were literally almost like lining up to get the help, was longer than the line of naysayers. Because you are always going to have a line of naysayers, a line of people who go, that'll never work. That's so stupid. You should stick with the cushy job thing, or this meditation stuff's a bunch of crock and this is lame. And there will always be naysayers, as Taylor Swift says, the haters going to hate, hate, hate. But the line of people who needed my help was greater than the line of naysayers. And so it's like, well, I guess I just have to do it and trust that, like you said, even if I help one person who helps one person, it was worth it. But I'm telling you, Jill, the tentacles on my business have been huge and the reach has been huge. And then I reach people like you who are then going to reach other people like you. And it keeps going and going.
It's amazing.
And going. So I know that we are getting close to the end of our hour, but I've got a couple of questions that I want to ask just to make sure that we cover all the good stuff. Imagine that you are the age that you are, talking to the younger version of yourself, maybe the 23 or 24-year-old who's sort of fresh in the field, and you're listening to this podcast. What would that younger Joe need to hear early in his career to avoid some of the pitfalls?
That's a great question. And I would tell that person, you know, it's okay. It's okay if you start feeling as something starting to get to you, but just recognize that you can't do this by yourself, that you need to have an outlet. It's okay to somebody. It's okay to go see a therapist if you have if something is bothering you. Just say something. You know, if you have it, if you know that you have an administration that is supportive, you know, go talk to your peer support group. Go find a coworker. Tell them that you're not, you know, this bothered you. What can I do? There's always help out there. Don't suffer in silence. Don't try to, you know, be the tough macho person. Don't have to suck it up, as they say, and just be open. And it's okay to not be okay. You know, it's okay. You need help. We all need help, but recognizing it early will stop you from having any PTSD or, you know, that's what I would
say. So you've touched on a really, really important point that I don't even know if it's 25-year-old male or female officers. I think it's 25-year-olds in general. I feel like they think they're bulletproof. Because I remember myself at 25, and I thought I was bulletproof, right?
Well, you know, you put that badge on, and you go out, and they give you all these cool tools, and you got a gun, and you have a lot of power. And it can go ahead, and you can feel like you're bulletproof. I been in several high-speed pursuits over 100 miles an hour doing stupid stuff. And, you know, how I'm sitting here today is just by the grace of God, because it's like, that was dumb. Why did I do that? But you have this overwhelming, you know, sense of self, and I could do anything. Right. Which is not great.
Well, it's interesting. What you're talking about is, you know, so there's only two places you can be in any given time. You can either be in fight, flight, or freeze, or fight or flight. We'll just call it fight or flight. Fight or flight, or rest and repair. You can't be in fight or flight and rest and repair at the same time. So if we go back way, way back, and we just imagine, you know, before us, and we're just going through our life, maybe we're picking apples from an orchard, or we're, I don't know, on another continent, you know, walking across a plain or the African bush or wherever we are. And we're just in very much enjoying mode. And we are, like I said, stopping to smell the flowers or picking an apricot off of a tree or whatever. That is very much relaxed, rest and repair. When your body is in that state, it can maintain, it can repair itself, it can heal itself. And then all of a sudden, here comes a cheetah or a lion that's ready to, you know, attack you, and you're running for your life. That's fight or flight.
Right.
Fight or flight is always supposed to be a sprint, not a marathon.
Right.
So if you are spending 12-hour shifts in fight or flight day after day after day, that is going to back up on you.
For sure.
And that's where the stress reducing techniques, meditation being one of them, it's not just a, oh, that must be nice. As you learned, it's a necessity.
Yeah, 100% a necessity.
So, the first thing I would like to say is I'm really grateful that you had the open mind to accept the invitation, even if it was just to be a good buddy to your friend.
Well, I thank God.
Yeah,
I went.
For sure.
I'm glad I went.
And I'm sure he is looking at what all the work that you're doing now and going, this is all starting from that weekend in Monterey.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me about the kind of guests that you're going to be having on your show. I know you probably don't have it all figured out yet, but you had mentioned experts before. Any hints or any foreshadowing you can share?
Yeah, sure. The next one's going to be the police chief in Palo Alto. His name's Bob Johnson. He'll be episode 2. And he's the one that taught that class that kind of started my journey. So I thought it would be most appropriate to start my first interview with the person who started me on my journey. And he has his own journey at what led him to meditation and mindfulness and being a certified compassion and mindful teacher. He's one of the only police chiefs that I know of in the nation that's certified to do all that. And so he's going to be my first guest. And then, you know, I've got others scheduled. I'm trying to get in touch with a Berkeley professor who wrote a book and about sleep. You know, sleep is, you know, with the shift work, that's probably most imperative part of repairing your brain is sleep. And I don't think we put enough emphasis on that in this job. So, and then I've got, you know, hopefully my chief that just retired and went through his own struggles. I hope to get him on, and you know, a gal who does yoga for firemen, and she teaches mindfulness. And so I get all, you know, and then an EMS chief that'll be on here for the, from the EMS side of it. And then a dispatcher that I work with that she's agreed to be on the podcast. So I've got a lot of things in the works, and I'm very excited, and we should be releasing the next episode probably that first week of February.
I'm so excited. And I'm already subscribed to your podcast. So anytime new podcasts come up, I'm going to be one of the first ones listening. From friend to friend, neighbor to neighbor, community Gilroy, you know, chums here, I am so thrilled for you. And I know that I can already see, feel, taste, smell beautiful things around this whole project that you are doing. So again, to remind everybody, the name of the podcast is The Mindful Cops. You can find you on Facebook, Instagram, and anywhere else?
Our website, our website, themindfulcops.com.
Okay. Now, for people who maybe don't feel comfortable, and what's great about a podcast is that you can listen to it in the quiet of your own car and nobody has to know you're listening to it. Because for some people, I can imagine it's going to take them a minute to get from maybe feeling like this is a bunch of woo-woo to maybe talking about it openly. If somebody needed to contact you directly, are there ways for them to do that one-on-one?
Yeah, on all those platforms, there's a button you can hit, because, you know, or you could just email me at themindfulcops@gmail.com and it'll come right to me. Yeah, you know, that's why I really wanted to do a podcast, because, you know, some, you know, first responders could be a little, you know, they don't want to listen, they don't want to come out and say it yet that they have issues, but it's a privacy of your own car. You can listen to it. You can choose to do what you want to do with it. And I thought that was my way of trying to reach
perfect. People. Awesome. Wonderful. All right, Joe. Well, you know that absolutely. Thanks, if you ever, we've got regular meditation classes. I know you probably got your own gig, but I enjoyed having you in my class last week. And the offer stands for when your daughter comes home. If you want to come back and be a guest, I'd love to have you. And
no, we'll be back for sure. 100%. Awesome. She already wants
great. Wonderful. You know how to find me, and let's stay in touch. Let's maybe do another podcast in a few months or 6 months and just do a touch base.
Sounds good. Thank
have
you so much.
Have a good rest of your day, Joe. And thanks for being a guest today.
All
have
right,
a good
you.
Rest of your
Bye.
Day. Bye-bye.
You too.
And to all of you Zen Room listeners, I would just like to say thank you again for tuning in to another episode of the Zen Room. My podcasts do get shared quite a bit. I have a feeling that this one might get shared just a little bit more. So to all of you from the United States and across the globe, I know that we've got international friends listening as well. I'd just like to say thank you very much. Have a great rest of your day. May the force be with you. And we will talk to you again on future podcasts. Bye for now.